Coming up on the Shelley Irwin Show podcast today, Wealthy Theater hosts Christian Wedgwood Services' presentation of The Story You Don't See, discussing human trafficking on the 22nd. We get a preview. We talk about a new book, Wimmy's One Country, One Book, launches on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We talk about the book, The Perfect Tuba, and then local tubist Karen Dunham follows up, discussing contradancing in West Michigan. And we talk to guests from the International Alliance for Responsible Drinking about Dry January.
Wedgwood Christian Services asks to see you January 22nd at Wealthy Theater, The Story You Don't See, the title, discussing human trafficking. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. We bring you on Corey Thompson on behalf of your day job advancement and community development officer. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me here, Shelley.
I appreciate the good work you and yours do. Remind me of the work of Wedgwood, please.
Absolutely. So Wedgwood has been here in our community. We're celebrating our 66th year in September, and we are thrilled to offer 33 different social services to our community. So we do offer residential placement for youth who have experienced some severe abuse and neglect. But at the same time, we are focused on offering prevention services, outpatient counseling, as well as substance use disorder treatment.
Are you changing lives?
Absolutely. We impact, this year we were able to report over 11,000 individuals impacted.
This is often the first step walking in the door.
Absolutely. A huge part of the work that we do is through referrals. So we work closely with the state of Michigan through public contracts, as well as social workers and caseworkers. But the individuals we work with are brave in taking that first step towards improving their mental and behavioral health.
Is human trafficking happening in our own backyard?
It is, unfortunately, Shelley, and I think that's a huge part of the work that we do as part of Wedgwood's Manassa Project, is to bring awareness and education around the issue of human trafficking. We understand that it is happening here, and we don't want to create a culture of fear, but when you know that it's happening here, you can often be an advocate for those that may be experiencing it.
What is human trafficking?
Human trafficking is any sort of exploitation that can happen through force, fraud, or coercion. And what we're finding is that it can happen younger and younger. So children cannot consent to any sort of act, whether it be labor or sexual. And so that's something that we really want to bring awareness to, so that people can identify if it may be happening in their community and report it.
What's happening January 22nd?
Yes, we are having a wonderful event at Wealthy Street Theater. It's called The Story You Don't See, and it'll be an interactive narrative where the audience can actually participate while also learning how something like human trafficking can take place. What are the vulnerabilities and what might cause someone to step into that life, as well as hearing from a panel of experts who work in this field every day.
January 22nd, Wealthy Theater, starting at 10. Who needs to attend?
I would say anyone can attend. I think that it will be a heavy topic. I would say parents can definitely think about bringing youth. That may be appropriate because it can open doors to even talking about what is safe to do online. Anyone who is interacting with youth, I would say, is a big one, but community members, pastoral staff, educators. This is a topic that is impactful for anyone to learn. I always say it's kind of like when you are driving a car and you don't notice that car until you're the one that owns it, and then you see it everywhere, right? And so when you know that human trafficking is taking place and what to look for, you can start to spot it in your community.
That is true on the car analogy. Tell me, The Story You Don't See, See How It Starts, Change How It Ends is your goal.
Absolutely. So really educating people on those stories that may be causing individuals to slip into a life of human trafficking, because oftentimes what people don't understand is it's not people being taken or stolen off the street more likely. It's often over a period of time, what we would call grooming. A lot of that emotional vulnerabilities are eventually taken advantage of after trust is built. And so understanding what are some of those vulnerabilities and how to step in and be a safe place.
Will the event itself be what's described as interactive?
It will. So the audience has the opportunity to really interact with the narrative. They are kind of guiding the story along. And in each scenario, they'll be able to understand how someone might be exploited.
Talking about an event come the 22nd of January. Yep, that's week after next. Let's not rush January, but let's plan it. Wedgwood hosts this free educational event at Wealthy Theater starting at 6. Again, the story you don't see. Back to more statistics. Goodness gracious, last year, 15 girls received care and treatment at Wedgwood. This does not include any boys, girls at other programs, organizations. So even though, you know, 15, those are 15 young lives.
It is. And it's girls that are ranging in the age of 14 to 18. So Wedgwood is limited in capacity for how many youth we can serve through our residential placement. And as you mentioned, we're one of the organizations that offers care for them. But there are many more. I know in 2014, the Grand Rapids Police Department even announced that they had identified up to, I believe it was 90 victims at that point in time. And they were on pace to identify up to 120. And that was as early as 2024.
Yes. Corey, you have there is actually a national human trafficking tip line in Michigan. Looks like in 2024, lots of signals were sent.
Absolutely. Over 219 signals, and that was just for the state of Michigan. So it has definitely been something that has been identified as early as 2024. And it's really important we do educate individuals of how to engage with the National Human Trafficking Tip Line, because it's not always safe as a bystander to interject into a situation where you may think human trafficking is taking place. So we do always recommend that they get involved by reporting it to the tip line, because it does automatically go to our local police department.
Yes. Well, I know, again, your boots are on the ground to help those in need. Do you also present an empowerment to prevent? You have awesome tip sheets that help us empower the youth and in lives by modeling healthy relationships and more. End us with this.
Absolutely. We offer free resources on our website at wedgwood.org. That's W-E-D-G-W-O-O-D. Anyone can access those resources at any time. And it really is about making sure our community feels empowered to speak out and also create a safe place for youth and adults who may be experiencing this.
Any myths that need to be dispelled?
I think a big myth, one of the biggest ones that we are consistently working against, is that it doesn't happen here. Unfortunately, it happens everywhere, especially here in West Michigan. And so we want to make people aware that it's happening here, while also understanding that it doesn't have a specific racial profile, ethnic profile, age profile. We are seeing the ages that are impacted by this get younger and younger. So we really want people to understand that this can happen to anyone, anywhere.
Corey Thompson, as Advancement and Community Development Officer from Wedgwood, what do you need from the community?
We would absolutely love for you to head to our website. Again, that's wedgwood.org. Check us out on our social medias. We also offer completely free trainings to our community, and by bringing people together, we can educate more individuals about how to spot it and that this is, in fact, happening here in West Michigan.
Details for the 22nd, please.
Yes, that again is on our website at wedgwood.org, as well as on Facebook and LinkedIn. You can find all the information there. It is completely free to attend.
Thank you, Corey Thompson, on behalf of Wedgwood Christian Services. Take care.
Thanks, Shelley.
We move on to Wimmy. He's been busy. One Country, One Book has been launched on, it will be launched on MLK Day. It's a national early learning initiative designed to unite communities around a shared story. So we speak with those involved. Founder, CEO of Wimage, You are in the house, Michael Hyacinth. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Shelley. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I know you have a much longer title. We'll get to that in a minute. But Wimage also includes Wimmy the robot, correct?
Yes.
Yes, whose face you have on your shirt. Teresa Irving, you are, I understand, a super mom and a supporter of Wimmy and more.
I sure am, yes.
Yeah, and you've got red Wimmy on you.
I do, yes. And I also have 8 children.
Well, that is something to be introduced to. How do you do it all?
Well, I think it takes a village and a lot of forgiveness from myself and from my children.
You have a favorite child?
I do. I do have a favorite child. If a mother tells you that there is no favorite, she's not telling the truth.
Really, no need to go there, but I bet you have a favorite robot.
I sure do, yes. And I think Wimmy is amazing in our home because it's really introduced conversation and laughter along with learning.
Great. All right, bringing you in, Michael, again, thank you for not only your service to we here in West Michigan, but your service to the country and more. Wimmy is just on a roll, my friend.
We're trying. We're really passionate about using this character that has started right here in West Michigan to empower kids throughout the country and showing them the power of imagination, creativity through literacy. We believe that, you know, without literacy, there is no innovation. And so that's why we're excited to launch this One Country, One Book initiative. To make sure that the kids in our communities are able to read. I don't know if you know this, but you know Michigan currently ranks in 44th out of the entire country in third grade reading proficiency, and we cannot have a sustainable economy, specifically as we look at digital communication and connectivity without literacy.
Teresa, is your family involved in experiencing the education via Wimmy?
Oh, yes, very much so. So I have children from 27 all the way down to 5. So we'll be empty nesters at 2038. And one of the things I think is really fun is that my children throughout their year growth have been able to experience Wimmy, which has been amazing because we actually got introduced to him right after COVID and how important it was for the sounds of words that children weren't seeing because we were all in masks.
Yes. So you just triggered that memory. There we are. But safety first. Tell me, One Country, One Book, a national early literacy initiative. What is the book?
Yes. Like many things, it started here. We've partnered with the Success Starts Early, a local initiative to make sure that kids in Grand Rapids have access to this amazing book. But when we heard the governor, we said, hey, we need to take this statewide. Mm-hmm. And when we saw the statistics nationally, we need to take this nationally. So Wimmy's Dreams is an amazing book that myself, Kevin, and Stephanie wrote. And it allows kids to be creative, to recognize the power of their imagination, all while learning to read. And what makes this really amazing, Shelley, is that in addition to the physical book each child gets, the book is also written in English and Spanish. And there's a digital read aloud that is done by Nate Boyer. For those who don't know Nate, he just released a movie on Netflix. He's a veteran like myself, a Green Beret, and he played in the NFL. And we told him about this initiative and he jumped on immediately. And so he's going to do the read aloud in English. The Spanish read aloud will be done by Christina from Uno, Dos, Tres, Andres. They are Grammy Award winners, and they've got a huge YouTube following, and they're all about Wimmy and literacy. And so how do we make reading fun? And we believe that Wimmy can be the amazing character to unite and engage kids.
Yeah, so we actually read it as a family as well. And so to be able to have not just a fun story to follow along with, it's also engaging because it asks really great questions that you get to be creative and innovative together.
Yes. The campaign, okay, again, a printed children's book, you said, the read-alouds. What will be the launch itself? MLK Day, that's Monday after next, I think.
Yes. One of the very focuses that Dr. King had was education. And so we're launching this initiative, on MLK Day, and we're hoping that it takes us all the way through March, which is considered March's Reading Month. And so it's an amazing opportunity for corporations to get behind us, making sure that children have access to this amazing book. Individuals can purchase the book itself. And we've got this amazing thing. If you purchase the book on our website, we are donating a book to a child. And so it's all on our website, wimmy.tv/onecountryonebook. Together, we can improve the literacy challenges that our kids face in this state and in this country.
Great. So important.
Teresa, describe, I mean, the book is Wimmy's Dream, so I'll have you describe what it's even about.
Well, it's a great idea and conversation about what he dreams and going through the community and being able to be introduced to other characters and have that idea of how things could be. And so it's just a really neat conversation. And I love it, too, because it has the color introduction and other things in it. And I think we first saw it before we even really knew Wimmy was at Meyer. Yeah. And then be able to find him at the children's library as well. So you start getting introduced to him all over the place. I think, was it the Griffins and the zoo is also where you can find him and have conversations and journeys.
Yes, because Wimmy is real.
Wimmy is real. He is everywhere. And, you know, when we first built Wimmy, Shelley, several years ago, we wanted Wimmy to be much more than just a character that you can watch on television, on our YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and on our local PBS. We felt as if Wimmy would be a great tool to inspire kids, regardless of their socioeconomic lives, to recognize the power of imagination. And that's what Wimmy is. And it started right here. And we're looking for the support of the community to come in and put this book into kids' hands and share the power of imagination. And I think that's what's going to help reduce the low proficiency level that our kids have in reading is inspiring kids to want to read.
Yes, and to raise those numbers, as you mentioned, Michigan is ranking currently 44th in the nation for third grade reading proficiency. So let's increase that.
Yes, and it's unacceptable, and we all can play a role in helping to reduce that, and we have to.
What do you leave us with, Teresa Irving, as a supermom?
Well, I really would like for families to get involved with Wimmy and make a difference by taking time with their children and getting into books, and this is one book for the whole nation they can really get into.
All right. Thank you for you. And I imagine your kids are in school right now learning.
They are in school, yes.
All right. Appreciate you. Take it away with summary, please, if you would, Michael Hyacinth, when it comes to Wimmy's One Country, One Book initiative.
Yes, just like the whole 6-7 just disrupted our entire lives, we believe that let's create an opportunity to do something more meaningful, inspire kids to connect and engage with literacy that will inspire them to be future innovators, to be future authors, to be future technology developers. And we believe it starts early. And we're looking for the community to collaborate and join us on this One Country, One Book, Wimmy's initiative. We're grateful for this partnership with you, Shelley, to share this message because we know how passionate you are about the community and everyone in this community.
Hashtag more to do. Head to your website for the action item, Michael.
Yes, wimmy.tv/onecountryonebook. Let's do it. Together we can.
All right. Tell Wimmy Happy New Year, please.
I will. I'm sure he's listening.
Sam Quinones on the line. He writes the perfect tuba, forging fulfillment from the bass horn band and hard work. Sam, good morning to you. It's bass because I remember my band days. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning. Yes, so many Americans were in band at one point in their lives, and part of this book was about the enormously positive community building effect of being in band.
Yes, we could go on and on. My old high school in Indiana played the flugelhorn and the trumpet and, played with the bassoon a little bit, but I digress. Hence the perfect tuba. What is considered a perfect tuba? Sam, let's start here.
Well, the perfect tuba has everything to do with Grand Rapids. In the tuba world, there is this aura I would say almost a mystique around two tubas that are considered the world's only perfect tubas, and they were built in Grand Rapids, Michigan in the 1930s by a then nationally well-known music instrument company known as the York Musical Instrument Company. That company, I could say, was probably the pinnacle of tuba construction and know-how in the world at that time. It was a remarkable workshop of people who had been working in brass instruments, but primarily they had figured out some amazing things about the tuba, and they created two custom tubas for the Philadelphia tuba symphony tuba player, Philip Donatelli. They sent one to him. They kept one. He couldn't play it. He's a bit too chubby. This tuba was enormous. Hmm. He sold that tuba to his key student, Arnold Jacobs, who then took that tuba to become into a career that made him really one of the titans of tuba playing in America in the 20th century, and landed the job at the Chicago Symphony. He was the foundation for the amazing brass sound, and he later bought the other tuba as well, so he owned both of them. These tubas are known to basically be perfect because they mightily enhance the entire orchestra. Nothing makes the orchestra sound quite so beautiful as one of these two tubas. And they were built in Grand Rapids in the 1930s. York Musical Instrument Company went out of business not long after. Well, it existed. It was a munitions factory during World War II. And it went out of business a while back. And nine companies. So nobody's really been able to replicate these two tubas. And nine companies have tried. And so that's really where the book's title comes from.
There we are, right on the front. There also was a custom music shop in Royal Oak that is also mentioned in your book?
Yes, that was much later. That was run by a guy named Fred Merrick, who did not play the tuba, but was probably one of the most important tuba promoters and distributors in the world, and certainly in America for sure. And he ran a thing called Tuba World. He had an entire house packed top to bottom with tubas, and it became kind of a mecca of sorts for tuba players of all ages and types who would come to Tuba World outside Detroit and spend a couple of days. Most of the time they would spend a couple, two or three days, because there were hundreds of tubas crammed into this kind of house. It was essentially a warehouse, but it was an old residence. And it became this place where everybody moved to buy their tuba. Fred Merrick wanted to corner, literally this was his plan, never quite did it, but he wanted to corner the tuba market, meaning he wanted to be the person that if you want to buy a tuba in America, you pretty much had to go through him. He never quite got there, but what he also was known for and venerated for in the tuba world, he died in 2008, is that he, through a variety of deals and investments in tuba manufacturers, helped improve the tuba. The tuba, when he started, had a lot of imperfections and was difficult to play. Through his investment in various manufacturers, the tuba became much easier to play, perhaps lighter, much more sturdy, and all the rest. But all that starts again in this little house outside Detroit called Tuba World.
Huh. The Perfect Tuba is our up for discussion with author Sam Quinones. Sam, let's talk more. The Perfect Tuba. What is your story to us? Do you share more stories about turning an everyday instrument into a window into American life today?
I do. Yes, I think that's. I don't play the tuba. I was never in marching band. I'm actually a crime reporter. I wrote two books. My previous two books were about the opioid epidemic, about OxyContin and heroin, and fentanyl. The other one, last one, was about fentanyl and methamphetamine. But after writing two books about this, I felt very strongly I needed a new direction, more enriching direction. I wanted to write about not people looking for happiness from something they buy, which is essential to the pursuit of drugs. It's also the message of much of corporate America, it sounds like these days, where you're going to be happy if you buy our product. I wanted to write about people who were finding fulfillment from what they developed internally through hard work, through discipline, through postponed gratification in a time where everyone's selling immediate gratification, through focus in a time of distraction. And so I began to write, strangely, but this is journalism. I love the idea of you finding stories that really you don't know anything about, but you're going to find out all about it. And I began to write stories of tuba players and especially two band directors, because both of them were doing what they do mostly because they loved it. They were not expecting vast financial rewards or fame, and they kept at it. And it was a beautiful, it became this beautiful search for people who were finding fulfillment from just hard work and their own gradual realizations of what the instrument or the band showed them they were capable of. And to me, this became such a beautiful idea. It became also, I believe, in a time we're currently going through where drenched in addiction, legal addiction products that are addictive, illegal products, all the rest, in a time of distraction and on the phones and all this, I wanted to write about people who were finding their own liberation from hard work. I wanted to write about people whose main focus was focus. You know, it seemed to me that tuba players in the end, tuba players and band directors had something very, very important to say about how we find a grounded, happy, fulfilled life. These are not new ideas, they're old ideas. We just forgot them or decided they didn't apply to us.
Yeah.
Or maybe we just have been barraged by things, by corporations trying to sell us stuff to take us in a different direction. But
right.
I know tuba players and band directors had something very interesting to tell a country drenched in addiction and
yeah.
distraction and isolation and all this. It's about collaboration. And I loved writing these stories, even though, you know, as I say, I don't play the tuba and was never in band.
But maybe you'll pick one up. Need to let you go, Sam, for our time purposes. How do we find out more about your work, The Perfect Tuba?
It's on it's on Amazon. It's in hardback, audiobook, ebook, but it's also for sale in many through bookshop.org, which is a book, the online bookstore for independent bookshops. Very much, very important to support them.
Yes, need to let you go, Sam. Thank you very much. You doing great things. Last name spelled Q-U-I-N-O-N-E-S. Thank you very much. In studio, let's just follow up the Perfect Tuba book with one who plays a perfect tuba and more. Karen Dunham in the house, one of our stellar listeners, community organizer, member, and a tubist, right? Are you a tubist?
I am.
Yes.
Also a euphonium player.
Ooh, what's the difference?
Tuba is bigger. Euphonium is smaller. A lot of trumpet players, like yourself, switch from trumpet to low brass using euphoniums.
Yeah, I did the flugelhorn just because I was like, I wanted to choose. Everybody plays the trumpet. Everybody plays the clarinet, which I started off on. But the only three of us play the flugelhorn. I could be first flugelhorn.
There you go.
There's the bottom line. Oh, Karen, we've seen you out and about. I know the community knows and loves you with your talents on the tuba and more. Why do I say that? Aren't you often the one we see with the tuba for community events? That's a compliment.
I'm pretty much the only one you see. I was out last night. We had a little demonstration at Calder Plaza in support of the January 6th facts. So I, of course, brought the large horn.
Thank you for your activism. The Perfect Tuba, I follow you up with this, not only to talk about the tuba, but also what else we can do in this community to express our love for music. You were involved in some presenting of the Perfect Tuba and giving Sam some background. Tell us a little bit more here.
If memory serves, he found me somehow, and he could have just been hitting a Google search and found Tuba Lady Grand Rapids or something. But we talked on the phone a couple of times, and I added him to a Facebook group where we discussed tuba things. This was a few years ago, and you put this book in front of me, and I look through the credits. I'm not there, so I will reach out to Sam. I met him in December. I went to the Midwest Clinic show in Chicago, and there he was, and he recognized me, and we got a selfie.
Well, maybe there's a part two, or he can add you to his social media. The book, The Perfect Tuber, is yours, so do with it. And I didn't realize when I started that interview that there are significant Grand Rapids ties.
Yes, the York Grand Rapids Band Instrument Company was here on South Division, kind of kitty corner from the Salvation Army major building for a very long time. And I myself collect York instruments. I have three of them. There's one from 1927, and it plays beautifully. It's always in tune. The valves are perfect. Perfect tuba. My Helicon, which is a 1909, always plays in tune, and it's amazing to see how horns from the golden era of brass bands and community bands held up. They don't wear out.
Yes. And lastly, I know you graced the presence of the Grand Rapids Public Museum. Didn't a bunch of you tubas get together?
Oh, yeah. We had about 150 players on December 19th for Tuba Christmas, and it was great fun. And under the whale, the images are just striking. We have a Facebook group and a website, and people can Google that and see what we looked like and sounded like too.
Nice. Let me tee up our next conversation, Brittany Bay, Spirit of the Dance, and ask why. There we are, Spirit of the Dance. Contra Dance, is that also part of Karen Dunham's resume?
Oh, yeah. It's the best thing I do and the thing I do best, actually. I've been a contra dance caller for almost 36 years. I started in 1990. It's great fun. It's different from being in a studio, but you still have a microphone in your face. You explain the dance figures to a group of people who are standing there looking at you thinking, what the heck does that mean? And then they start doing it. They join hands in a circle and circle to the left, and then they go back to the right. Then they face their partner, take two hands, balance, and swing. They walk it through a couple of times, then we drop the needle, we add live music, and we're off and rolling.
How often are contra dances held?
Pretty much every weekend, many Saturdays, many Friday nights. We have two dance series here in Grand Rapids. There's a new one in Holland, the Makatawa Contra Dance. Those are on Friday nights. So if you want to travel a little bit, you trust your snow tires, you could hit a Grand Rapids dance on a Friday and then go to Lansing or Kalamazoo on a Saturday. There used to be Sunday afternoon dances. I think Kalamazoo just had one last week that was a casual dance. But you could literally do this several times a week.
How does one even get started?
One goes to a website and looks up the location and time and date, etc., of the nearest local counter dance that's coming up. And one appears in suitable attire. You want to dress in layers.
Why layers? I think I know why.
It's a very warm activity. It's indoors. It's heated. You don't want to dress like you did for the Grinch run at the Riverside Park, which the last time I saw you, everyone was turning blue.
Yeah, it was a little chilly, as they say.
Yep.
But dress as though it's 10 degrees warmer or something as such. And then how important is my shoe wear?
You don't want to wear high heels. You don't want to wear athletic shoes that stick to the floor. You want to wear something with a smooth-ish leather sole, and that means carrying them in a bag and changing your shoes.
How about the fellowship? Am I going to meet some new friends?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Someone will ask you to dance. You don't need to bring a partner. You don't need to come with anyone. I've gone by myself for 42 years. And someone will see you and recognize a new face and walk over and invite you to dance. We have name tags so that everybody knows that you're Shelley. And somebody will say, would you care to dance? And there's no discussion about astrological sign or what do you do for a living or are you single? Nothing like that. If you're there at the dance and you're not tethered to an oxygen cannula, it's presumed that you would like to dance.
There's some psychological positiveness with that, as they say, no in junior high standing in the corner and waiting.
None of that. It's a dry event. There's never any alcohol that's served, which is fabulous all year round, but especially for January. If you are in a situation, widowed, divorced, and you are in need of friendly touch, casual touch, this is a good place to get it, because somebody will hold your hands. They will touch you on the shoulder. They might put their arms around you for a swing, and you don't have to have any commitment. It's not a long-term engagement.
And all generations are you touching here?
Oh, yeah. People bring their little kids. They're senior citizens. If the littles are too small to dance, they'll be in a little clothesline pen in the corner playing with toys, and different parents take turns watching them. Sometimes they get up and dance. We have teens, 20s, 30s, ARP card holders, you name it.
That was the answer to my question. Not quite done yet. Let's hear some more from perhaps what we dance to in the form of Contra Dance, Spirit of the Dance. Track 14 you like, which is called Swinging on a Gate, Star of Munster, High Road to Linton?
Yeah.
All right, that does get you up and moving, Karen Dunham. Very nice. All right, again, full circle, we'll call you the perfect tubist in Grand Rapids. Of course, we'll call you a loyal listener and supporter, and our animals enjoy the microphones that you shared with them. That's an inside story, but thank you for that.
Did you show a picture of that to the listeners?
I don't know if I have. I think I will. How's that?
I think you should.
Within 12 hours, you will see on my personal and professional Facebook, Karen graciously, you bought three or four of them for my three, and also for Dee's pup, little microphones to chew.
They are dog toys.
Dog toys.
Shaped like microphones, and I referred to them as the Rover microphones.
Oh, right. Running that
Shelley got three and Dee got one.
Yes. And thank you for your support to WGVU.
You bet.
Karen Dunham, how do we find out more about Contra dancing?
The best place to look is trycontra.com. trycontra.com. And it has links to all of the dances all over the country and to some extent the world. It sorts them out by day, by month, by dance camp, by location, and it's a fabulous resource.
I would consider that exercise as well. So
Looking
for a new, if you don't want to run a marathon, try Contra dancing.
Yes.
Karen, thanks for you. We'll see you out and about with your tuba and your bike, and thank you for listening. Enjoy this new year. Take care. Julian Braithwaite on the line. He's a big deal, an important conversation we are to have. CEO, International Alliance for Responsible Drinking. Are you making it a dry January? Let's talk about that and perhaps the latest research. What really is being said about drinking and moderation in 2026? Hello to you, Julian.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you. Tell me about the International Alliance for Responsible Drinking, please.
So we're a science-based organization that supports promoting moderation and responsible drinking and tackling harmful drinking. And we're basically science-based, so what we do is look at what the science, what decades of research say, and act accordingly. And we manage the largest database on science and health in the world.
Thank you for your leadership. What would be a dry January? What's the intent?
So, look, I mean, dry January is, everyone's talking about it at the moment, of course. Anything that gets people to pause and reflect on their relationship with alcohol can be a good thing. But that being said, what decades of research and science say is that drinking in moderation throughout the whole year is better than any one-month reset and more sustainable and less likely to lead the sort of binge and bust cycle that is definitely not good for you.
All right, let's get into your long-term scientific data. What is being actually shown about drinking and health, Julian?
So what decades of research say, and, you hear, in individual studies and, they grab the headlines, but actually the evidence is really stable on this. And what decades of research say is that if you drink in moderation for most adults, on average, people will live at least as long as people who don't drink at all. So the science, you know, to summarize it, the science is on the side of moderation.
What is the definition of moderation?
So moderation is, it's defined differently. There's no one-size-fits-all, but it's, the U.S. Dietary guidelines have one definition, but it's, it's drinking 1 to 2 drinks a day, not drinking them all at once throughout the week, and it's drinking patterns as well as actual volumes. It's spacing it out. It's spacing it out through the week. It's spacing it out through the year.
Many adults, Julian, say they feel caught between pressure to cut back and pressures to be social. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a tension, isn't there, Shelley? I mean, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the one hand, consuming alcohol has been part of social connection. It's part of celebration. It's part of people's lives. But on the other hand, there's all of this messaging around, reducing consumption. And people feel caught in the middle of that. And you can see why this, this conversation does feel so conflicted.
Are all generations affected by perhaps participating in a dry January, or I understand Gen Z is often described as the most intentional generation. Talk about this.
So it's really interesting, Shelley. You're right. I mean, all of our data shows that Gen Z are the most deliberate about alcohol, that it's much more about the occasion for them, that it's much more linked to their overall approach to well-being, and that they're adopting new drinking patterns, which include things like zebra striping, or I think what you'd say in the U.S. zebra striping, where they're adopting no and low alcohol products and using them, in an evening where they might go out and have a beer, and then they'll follow it up with a non-alcoholic beer or a mocktail, and so they're able to sort of stay in the social occasion for longer and drink moderately. They have more choice, more freedom of choice. And we think that's a really interesting development. Of course, much of the industry has been responding to that by producing some great products in that no and low category.
Julian Braithwaite with us, Director General of the International Alliance for Responsible Drinking, a global not-for-profit working, of course, to reduce harmful drinking and more, making informed choices the key. Is this an international conversation, or is it just the good old U.S. of A.?
It's an international conversation. You see it in Europe. In the big developed markets of the world, like the United States and Europe, you see these trends. What you do see is people drinking more in moderation. Overall, volumes may not necessarily be going down that much, but actually, in terms of the health outcomes, you really see that playing out. So, in terms of harmful drinking, it's going down across the United States, going down across Europe. And that's a really positive development. It's linked to the fact that people are drinking more in moderation. There's less of the sort of binge and bust culture that you used to have. And that's a very positive development.
Yes. So here we are, early January. If one still wants to get on a dry January, motivation, how does one start?
So, that's a personal decision and a personal choice. I mean, what the science says, of course, is that actually, if you think about, your long-term drinking patterns and you think about drinking moderately throughout the whole year, that actually will be better than just a one-month reset. So this is a moment really to think about that. Of course, Dry January is a great catalyst for getting people to think about their relationship with alcohol. But, what people should know is that the science is on the side of moderation. It's on the side of them taking decisions about drinking moderately throughout the whole year rather than just thinking about a single month fix.
Anything we've missed, Julian, before I ask for more information?
I think that covers it. But again, you're quite right about providing people with more information. People want the freedom to choose. They need to have the information to make those choices. And of course, they should speak to their doctor if they have questions. But we at IARD also have information on our website. It's www.iard.org. That's IARD. And we have summaries of the evidence, of the science, so that people can go and look for themselves. and make up their own minds based on the science and have the ability to make informed choices about this important subject.
Yes, thanks for this conversation about, well, how much alcohol is safe to drink and, of course, participating in a dry January leading to ultimate moderation and more. Julian Braithwaite, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Your inspiration for the day, according to Mehmet Murat Ildin, in the new year, never forget to thank your past years because they enabled you to reach today, exclamation mark. Without the stairs of the past, you cannot arrive at the future. Think on that. Hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Shelley Irwin.